Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Back, holy cow, it's Super Bowl Sunday, half of America, all of America celebrating that fascist land acquisition game. Who knows, maybe Lady Gaga will go rogue at halftime. Here's hoping for some surprises today, but here we are at Arts and Seizures, more arts than seizures today for a change, Dave. I'm very excited to have a guy I'm really proud to call my friend here, the absolute greatest pianist of our generation, at the vanguard of the avant-garde, our friend Matthew Shipp, who is as outspoken politically as he is outrageous on the piano. I call it radical left-wing pianoism. How's it going, Matt?
Great. I'm not outspoken.
Dude, you are relentless on the social media.
You seem
to have a little bee in your bonnet about the president, for one.
I don't like the cat.
Dude. no sentient being would.
Well, that's... I agree with that wholeheartedly. This guy... It gives me nausea, and there's not enough vomit bags in existence for the fluids I have for this man.
Oh man! Well, we're gonna talk about that. We're gonna talk about politics and music and separate the two. And earlier though, we're gonna talk about the piano. We're gonna talk about your records and your amazing career. As really astonishing piano player.
How can you have an amazing career if you play jazz?
Yeah. Well, Mama, don't let your boys grow up to be avant-garde jazz pianists. How do you do it?
Well, I remember when I tell my father that that's what I wanted to do with this life, my life. I remember the look in his face, and I remember the long silence, and that's compounded by the fact that my parents were friends with a couple jazz musicians. My mother was really close with Clifford Brown,
the great trumpeter.
Right. And my father was really close with Lem Winchester, a vibes player that played with Ramsey Lewis. But Lem Winchester had also been a police officer, and my father was a cop. So they were friends there, and they knew the hardships of the jazz life. And, you know, that's straight ahead, let alone going into this subgenre that, you know, that I'm supposedly a part of. So, you know, I mean, they knew I was serious and had a lot of drive, and so you know, you can't stop somebody from doing something they really want to do.
Well, that's right. Goddamn straight. You got to be the man you want to be, not the man you were told to be. But who comes to these gigs? I mean, I'm a huge jazz fan. I have been since I was in high school. I love John Coltrane. I mean, I loved Mingus. Like, the first time I heard it, it was like, holy shit, this is for me. Right. And of course, I was a drummer, so there was a good entry point for me when I was, like, you know, 14, 15 years old, into Max Roach. You know, you pretty soon realize that Buddy Rich is square. That's not where it's at.
He sounds great on this Bud Powell.
Bud Powell, you know, not my favorite. I got to be honest with
really?
You. I don't find those records to be very, very soulful, to be honest with you.
Well,
He's not my favorite.
It's a very specific thing. If you don't go with that thing, I could see saying that. But to me, Bud Powell is this might feed into what you said. He's a mathematician of the highest level. But it's a very poetic math that, I mean, all math is poetic, but it's a very specific poetics, mathematics to it. And you don't really love Bud with Bird?
as you know, I wish he made more records as a sideman, actually.
Right.
Because obviously he's got the chops. So he knows how to, like, you know, I mean, there's no question his technique is unbelievable. But
It's actually an idiosyncratic technique, too, because when you say that, it feeds into the idea of like a classically trained type of technique. Bud Powell's technique is as idiosyncratic as Monk's, actually. It's just a different.
Now, Monk is probably, you know, maybe my all-time favorite piano player because he's got that look of it, looking at it sideways. It sounds like this fucked up kind of blues. It's like Picasso.
Right.
You know, it's like he's putting like both eyes and the nose on the same side of the head.
Right.
You know, like trying to get that note between the notes kind of thing.
Right.
But that is that sound, and it's not a lot of notes. He doesn't play, you know, particularly fast. Monk.
Right.
Playing fast is good, but maybe it's overrated. I don't know.
A lot of things are overrated and underrated at the same time. So.
How did you come to playing like this? I mean, they call it free jazz. I hate these labels, honestly.
Well, I don't really play free jazz.
Well, you know, the best jazz, free jazz, in my experience, isn't actually that free.
Right.
And I don't mean the ticket price at the Village Vanguard.
Right.
I mean, there's organization, there's structure, there are people listening to each other. And yeah, you got to sort of listen to the, you know, to what's going on between the lines, but it's not completely free. People are listening and tuned in, and there's method to the madness, and you know, maybe it's more the journey than the destination, but it's not that free. So how do you come to this though? Because you're not playing straight bop, you're not playing lounge music, you're not playing shopping mall jazz. You're playing something.
Well, I've done a lot of albums that are different. So I to answer your question, when I originally got into jazz. Because I was in classical music before that, my first entry points were probably like Oscar Peterson, and then I got into Phineas Newborn Jr. and then Bill Evans, but you know, I was I'd go to the library and just read in the history of jazz, and jazz history is presented in the books in a very linear fashion. You know, I mean, I don't believe in even time exists. So, you know, take that for what you want. But if you look at it in a linear time frame, the books go from, you know, ragtime to Dixieland to swing to bebop to cool to fusion.
Hard bop to post bop.
Yeah. And then, and so you just read it in the books. And I was interested in exploring the whole history. And then when I heard Coltrane made a very early impact on me, and when I heard that, I was kind of really entranced by that whole idea of what went on in the 60s, which is free jazz is usually considered a 60s phenomena.
Well, I think free jazz and the free jazz movement was there's a lot of freedom and liberation. There was a lot of militancy to it, and as a political statement.
From the writers. I mean, and certain musicians. I would say that's the case with Archie Shepp.
Albert Eiler, Coltrane?
Well, Albert Eiler was... No, Coltrane was just a musician. And I think Coltrane was really interested in spiritual ideas. I don't think... Like the whole political thing that, like, the Kosky book and people put on him. I don't think that was really part of Coltrane's agenda whatsoever. I think he just was in the 60s. But I think he really was just a spiritual explorer.
Certainly Mingus had a political agenda. I mean,
well,
look at the song titles.
Crazy.
I love the way Mingus plays piano, by the way.
Oh, I do too.
I love Oh Yeah, maybe my favorite record. And that's, you know, it's got, starts off with, you know, Lord, Don't Drop That Atomic Bomb on Me.
I mean, actually, my favorite piano playing on a Mingus album is in the Town Hall concert that Jackie Byard.
I love Jackie Byard. I think he's one of the most underrated cats.
But that whole long,
Arcadum, it's like that medley of styles, right?
What I like, there's on that one Mingus album, there's like a really impressionistic kind of third streamy piano suite on there by Jackie Byard. It's one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard in my life.
I mean, he was a master.
Yeah, he was great.
I mean, he was a master. And I love that band especially because I love Eric Dolphy so much. And I mean, Dolphy is a sideman of Mingus. I mean, to me, that was a band. When he had, Dolphy and... Jackie Byard, you know, of course, Danny Richman, the rhythm section, but he held that band together for a while.
Right.
And one of the great things about Coltrane, of course, was he held that quartet together for a while. He had a serious connection. Well, how many years was it?
Three or four.
Three or four years?
I mean, that's a jazz group,
that's a lot.
Okay, but that's the great thing about Coltrane is the amount of stuff he did as a leader is basically in a, you know, six or seven year period. That's immense. I mean,
when you think of the great John Coltrane quartet, you think of that rolling thunder of Elvin Jones, right. And I think of McCoy Tyner, who I hear a lot of McCoy, and you're playing.
Yeah, McCoy's actually probably, in some ways, biggest influence.
I'll tell you what. Let's when we play. This is from your greatest hits record.
Well, it's actually originally the cut you're playing is from an album called Pastoral Composure.
Okay, good.
And it's a quartet with the late great Roy Campbell on trumpet.
And the trumpet's very lead. But I love this because you put the trumpet first on this track, and it's really leading. You know, it's very rhythm driven, and this is you just like the rhythm is just very very charging. And I said before, it reminded me of the Coltrane record Olé, which is just for the driving nature of it. But let's listen.
I don't solo on this cut, so you don't really hear a sense of my pianistic language. But
we're gonna get to that.
No, I mean it's not necessary because it's a piece of music.
So. All right, Dave, keep the mics on while we do this. And obviously, it's important to you because you chose to lead off this record with this.
And it's the great William Parker on bass.
Who you play with yours. Speaking of keeping bands together, David S. Ware.
Right.
I mean, you guys had pretty much the same lineup. I think you changed drummers
a few times.
Yeah, but it was you and William Parker.
Right.
I mean, for years, and that was a powerhouse motherfucker
16,
band.
16 years.
Holy shit. Was that a great band? I think one of the great jazz concerts, events that I was ever fortunate enough to see was when you guys played at Columbia University.
Oh, you were there?
You better, as there was Cecil playing.
Yeah, we opened for Cecil Keller and Max Roach.
Which was unbelievable, but I thought the set that the David Ware Quartet put forth that day.
Yeah, that was supposedly one of our best sets.
Dude, man, I blew my hair back, blew my skirt up. I mean, that was, it was very spiritualized.
Yeah, that, you know, after all the years, because I left the band probably like a couple years after that, and that, like, all the years that I was in that band actually led up to that one gig, and everything kind of went down after that gig. But it's just interesting that gig was probably the apotheosis of the whole experience I had with that band.
It was absolutely fantastic. I feel there was more jazz, free jazz, meaning like free, not paying for it, in New York at a certain time, because I remember I saw Elvin Jones.
Was that gig free?
Absolutely.
Oh, was that?
It was on the Columbia campus.
Yeah, it was on the campus. There were 10,000 people there.
It was massive, and it was great, you know, and it was like, you know, yeah, I mean, it was great for young people to come out, because even curiosity seekers could come and dig it and get blown away without, you know, making a commitment at the box office, which kind of scares a lot of people away.
Well, it shouldn't. I mean, there's nothing, very few things in life. You know, you had to put something out to get it.
Yeah. Well, but how do you get rock and roll? The world is such a flat land of two dimensions of rock and roll, and maybe R&B, and maybe that delves into some roots music. And I can't even get my friends to listen to Charles Mingus, which is like rock and roll. It's like Ray Charles, like going awry.
Right, you know,
it's like hypercharge, and they hear jazz, and their brains just shut off. It's American tragedy, frankly.
Right. Well, but at the same time, there's a lot of people into alternative culture. There's a lot of people, even though people are not into jazz. Jazz is. It's cool to be jazzy. It's just not cool to really get into the substance of it. So as a jazz musician, you're always dealing with the margins of that and trying to bring new people into it. Because there's always people looking. There are always people looking for things. I mean, that's a given. So it's just a matter of trying to find them, which gets harder and harder because the jazz music doesn't really get exposed on radio. There's less and less media outlets to talk about it.
I think... Actually, I think the problem is it's getting easier and easier, to be honest with you, because the discovery process has kind of disappeared with the internet. I can push a button, hear 5 seconds of something without any investment, decide I don't like it on the spot, and move on.
But do people, I mean, but still people don't go outside their comfort zones still with that a lot of times, you know?
You know, listen, I might be, you know, an unusual type of guy, and that, like, my curiosity was such that I would search these things out.
Right.
And the weirder and more far out, you know, the better. And, you know, they say curiosity killed the cat, but satisfaction brought him back, right?
Right.
And to me, though, I'd go into New York and have to find you know, like a jazz record, or finding a Howlin' Wolf record or a Muddy Waters record, you know, or an Aretha Franklin record was difficult when I was 14 or 15. You just couldn't turn on your computer phone and get access to it. I remember I brought an Aretha Franklin record to play to my friends in high school, and they said, "Why do you want to listen to some old black lady? What's wrong with you?" I mean, it just wasn't hip.
Right.
You know?
But which is the other thing I was going to bring. When you said people's minds shut down about jazz, I think people's minds shut down around anything that's not a part of their immediate social group. That's so, you know, whether it be like you said, some older R&B. If they're just listening to, I don't know what people listen to today, but yeah, you know,
there was the Lady Gaga at the halftime show, dude.
Well, I don't.
You know, did you watch Beyonce last year at the halftime show?
No, I missed that, the Black Panther thing.
Yeah, to be talking about politics and music.
I was actually overseas on tour at the time.
Well, you have an internet machine, right?
So,
I mean, it was an amazing...
Well, I saw the blowback from it.
Right. Well, it's an amazing... You should watch it. It's more avant-garde than you would expect from, you know, this venue. How did she get that by? But yet, to me, there was no song. There was nothing memorable about it.
Right.
It was all about... posture. I mean, it was incredible, the choreo, I mean, all that stuff, but I can't recall the song.
Right.
No,
well,
fucking memory of like,
well,
what
I'm just,
actually was
I'm
going
just
down
amazing
there.
To me that somebody kind of appropriating a few Black Panther things pisses so many people off. That was like, really?
I mean, dude, we had a Black president, man. You
right.
know, and it pissed enough people off to vote for, you know, the fucking, you know, ass fucking clown face that's in the White House now.
Right. Well, I don't. I'm trying to keep this upbeat. If we start talking about him, we're going to go to a very negative place.
Dave, let's put. So we're going to play a game. We're going to do the old fashioned blindfold.
I don't do blindfold.
Beach style.
Test.
Well, welcome to Arts and Seizures.
Okay.
But hey, listen, I promise we're not going to. No. I'm not trying to play gotcha here.
Oh no.
Okay,
no,
so just play the first one. You know this, and we'll just talk about it for a little while because you're going to know this right off the bat. All right, hit me.
Cecil Taylor.
I can name that song. Song in one note.
Anyway, I used to listen to Cecil a lot as a kid. I haven't listened to him for 30 years.
It's disruptive. Right. All right, you can roll that down. You know, I've seen Cecil Taylor play probably 20 times.
Right.
And there was a time when it was hard to see him play. He didn't play a lot.
Right.
And you know, Cecil, I don't want to play in clubs. I want to play in theaters. And you know, his demands for the piano. It's like, I think at some point, okay, I'm going to play the Knitting Factory. But
right. Well, let me just say one thing as an avant-gardist. The Cecil Taylor influence in me is very minimal. I've always purposely decided to stay away from him just because he's just such a looming presence within. He's one of the creators of this whole thing. So I was very, from the beginning, cognizant of going elsewhere. And there's so many aspects of Cecil that are very interesting.
I love when I'm listening to him, you know, and they're just going for it. All of a sudden, you know, it sounds very, very free and, you know, splatter painting.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, yeah, that's like, let's like Duke Ellington. You're hearing that sort of come up. Or you start hearing him just start playing some blue notes, you know.
Right,
he
right.
slurs that minor third and it's like, okay, that's really cool.
Well, I think
that's a familiar place for me. It's
right. Like, he was really into Horace Silver. It's one of his favorite. I mean, I would say Cecil's favorite pianist in some ways. And I don't mean to cut it between black and white, but his favorite white pianists were Lenny Tristano and Dave Brubeck.
I'm not a Dave Brubeck fan, are you?
I mean, frankly, you should check out some of his later solo stuff. It's really great. And Brubeck's a little crazy. I mean, he's like a free associator. If you really listen to certain things, like little classical motifs that come in and then this, he's kind of crazy. I mean, it's like, and have you ever listened to the octet?
Yeah, I've listened to a lot
of
it.
Okay, because that's what really influenced Cecil was the octet, not the quartet.
Right.
Paul Desmond.
Well, the quartet, and of course, I mean, yeah, Paul Desmond, who wrote Take Five. It wasn't even Brubeck who wrote it. But to me, Dave Brubeck still has this air of, it does sound very white. Can I say that? I don't even know what the fuck I'm allowed to say anymore.
But he's crazy, though. And I mean, there's like, if you really listen to him, like, he plays anything that comes into his mind on his solos.
Take Five is brilliant, but I don't know.
But whatever.
It's what like white people listen to when they want him to feel hip.
It has its reasons. Raison d'etre. But I mean, Cecil really loved Horace Silver and Monk also, and Ellington. And the Horace Silver is really evident in his playing at times, especially in the really early stuff on Blue Note.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, there's a lot to be said about Cecil.
There certainly is. I was lucky I got to hang out with him a few times.
I feel sorry for you unless you're really into all night marathons with.
Well, that's what it was. It was a lot of cocaine and champagne.
Right.
And you know, I mean, love listening to his stories. And then about the third time we were hanging out, I thought I was going to get to play theremin in his group, which was going to be like the apogee of my career.
Didn't
work out for various reasons. But about the third time, you sort of realized that he was telling me the same stories over and over again.
Well, I don't know how long this go, but now that he's older, that's what he does. I mean, and it's the same. If you were hanging out with him 5 or 6 years ago, it would be the same stories that he sells in cycles, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he's a beautiful cat. But to me, Cecil Taylor, in a way, I can't listen to those records in my house because, like I said, they're too disruptive. It's like, for the same reason I don't have a Jackson Pollock hanging in my bedroom. The energy is just all fucking wrong.
Right.
And, I mean, for when you want calm.
Right.
But
right.
as a spectator sport, right. I think this is something that people need to understand about so-called, quote-unquote, free jazz, is you got to go see it. You got to let it wash over. You got to take in the energy. People always say, oh, I'm not smart enough. I'm not going to get it. They say the same bullshit about – I was like my Richard Pryor white person voice, by the way. Right. Oh, I don't get it. You know? It's like – or they say – feel the same way about classical music. I'm not going to get it. So there's nothing to get.
That's the thing. There is nothing to get.
And enjoy it. And, you know – people are afraid. It was rock and roll's music that you react to.
Right.
Jazz and classical is music you listen to.
Right. Well, I mean, I would say that you just got to resonate with the language. Feel it. It's just about feeling the language. And then once you go with the flow and feel the language, there's nothing to get as far as if you're sitting back trying to rationalize it in some type of or intellectual experience. It's really is a matter of just feeling and resonating with the resonance of the language.
I agree. And what you do and what Cecil does is very visceral. Okay, let's next track. Here we go. More fun. Now this is there's no piano on this.
Ornette,
of course. And classic Ornette playing the blues on his plastic horn. I'll tell you what. So here's the Cecil story I love. Cecil loves to tell a story about, talking to Ornette Coleman, another guy who really branded himself as free jazz, very, very much so. And Cecil says, well, I told Ornette Poo. That's what he calls him, Ornette Poo.
Yeah, he doesn't like him.
Yeah, I said, Ornette Poo.
Even though he played at his funeral, though.
You're just a diatonic player.
Right.
It's like putting him down for playing the blues, basically, right?
Whoa, no. He plays patterns. That's what Cecil says. He plays patterns.
I said, you're just a diatonic player. Yeah. But I said to Cecil, look, dude, we can't all play all the notes all the time.
Right.
And Cecil laughed, and that was kind of cool. It's kind of like when he's like having a glass of champagne.
Ornette's actually one of my favorite improvisers. He's one of the most natural. He is a blues player. I mean, that's the resonance of the language is and blues is not a form. Blues is a essence. It's a language resonant field, and it's a feeling. When you talk about a field, you're talking in physics about an overall matrix, and the emotional aspect of it. I mean, what is language? Language is
communication.
Physics. It's communication. It's telepathy. It's energy being focused into a you say diatonic as far as putting it into a scale form, but it's a discursive way of communicating, and it's a field of emotion, resonance, and feeling, and that's what the blues is, not a form.
I agree. And watching Ornette Coleman, another one of the greatest musical experiences I've ever had is watching the last. Quartet he had with the two bass players, one playing arco, the other pizzicato, bowing and picking for you lay people and civilians out there, with his son DiNardo on drums. To me, this was an amazingly good band. Incredible, the two bass players, the work they did, it made sense. The bowing cello was able to echo the lines he was playing on his horn. I thought he played, people say when he picked up the trumpet it was mocking Miles, but I think it was raspy and dirty and bluesy.
Right. Well, his trumpet doesn't sound like Miles.
No, it sounds like it's from the gutter. I love it.
No, his trumpet playing is out. I mean, his sax playing is really, between a really blues experience and what you can imagine a post Charlie Parker.
Well, I said about it? I said this is like Charlie Parker trying to play Charlie Patton.
Right.
I mean, it was Beefheart-esque the way he was trying to squeeze what was really blues and that song Ramblin', really threw a bebop filter, but at the end it's still blues.
Right.
It might be warped, it might be sideways. Next track, this is one of your main men, but maybe this is...
Have any men.
You don't got any men?
No.
All right. but let's see. This is, when I was looking to play something from this artist, he does. This is a track that I didn't know, but I kind of thought it was groovy. Yeah, let it roll for a second, Dave.
That's a Blue Note album. Oh, Andrew Hill?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Andrew. I hit to play a single note before I, because I couldn't figure it
right,
out.
Right, but it's not one of his better known records.
What album is this?
This song is called Illusion. I don't want to call the name of the record. It was a double record of outtakes.
It's one for one.
One for one. Thanks, Dave. Oh, we were laughing for it, Dave. But just to keep us up to date, what did Miles Davis have to say about Cecil when he did his own blindfold test?
This is right. Well, he said some very nasty stuff.
He said, first thing
he said, is this what the white critics are digging? This motherfucker ain't playing shit.
What I have in front of me, take it off. That's some sad shit, man.
I love this Andrew Hill chick. It's very groovy.
Yeah, I never heard this.
It's Mickey Roker on drums and Ron Carter on bass.
Right.
And this sounds like you talk about the shape of jazz to come. This is like very almost chill out hip hoppy in its way.
Yeah, no, it's
1969. It's got string section. It was a real discovery for me just when I was looking through.
By the way, there's an Andrew Hill album with and I didn't hear this album growing up, but it's with Alan Silva and Freddie Waits. I can't remember the name of it now, but it sounds just like me. But I had never heard this album until that. You know, people start saying, "Wow, this Andrew Hill." And I'm like, "Oh my god!"
Well, I've heard you talk about Andrew Hill as a guy that you really dug. Anyway, let's keep it rolling because this is the fastest half hour on the internet today. Arts and Seizures, of course, streaming live from Bushwick on the Heritage Radio Network. Let's bring it up. We have a couple more, and here's somebody nobody don't like.
Oh, Deke.
Yeah.
What is this?
This is this Money Jungle.
Oh, yeah. This is Money Jungle. I thought it was Mingus. And I was like,
well, and you were also right.
Yeah.
Also correct. Right. This was that great Max, trio session. Yeah. Roach, Mingus, and Duke, which is Duke's word.
This is fucking great.
Yeah. And what did Miles Davis have to say about this, Dave?
Miles said about this, "What am I supposed to say to that? That's ridiculous. You see the way they can fuck up music? It's a mismatch."
Woo, Duke, go, brother.
Yeah, I love hearing Duke in this setting, right?
Yeah.
Woo! Yeah. And, I mean, Duke Ellington, he has a very holistic
sense of the piano. Really, I mean, he can create a whole cosmos, and it's really fleshing out the whole piano as a cosmos and as a universe. I mean, he can do little figures here, little trills here, and it's a holistic painting, I mean.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the highest compliment I ever heard paid to any human being was Captain Beefheart talking about Duke Ellington. He said, you know, he met Duke Ellington one time, and he was wearing a Rolex. He said it was crusted in diamonds, must have been worth like $50,000. He said, Duke's got so much class, that thing looked like a Timex on his wrist. Yeah, I mean, if there's anyone that I personally would like to emulate, it's Duke Ellington.
Well, he's one of the premier geniuses of the 20th century. So.
Without a doubt. And apparently a real fucking mensch.
Well, he loved women.
Yeah.
I think he's in the record book for having slept with more women than any one person ever.
Yeah, I think he said, I think it was about Cootie Williams, he said, you know, because, you know, he loved the guys in his band. He said, you know, these guys are getting old. They're like 7 years old. Like, how could he play that good? He still hits that high note. Right. How could he do that? And Duke said, because he still thinks it'll get him laid.
Right. That type of stuff those are the old days. You know, that type of musicians aren't like that anymore.
No, it's a sad thing. I mean, you know, I mean, what is the jazz scene now? Who's coming out to see you these days?
People.
People. All right.
People are people. They need language. They need we're musicians. We're physicians of the muse. So they need the language.
And we got to tell everybody you're playing at the Cutting Room this week.
Yes, I'm playing there this Thursday, February 9th at 7:30 at the Cutting Room, which is at 44 East 32nd Street in Manhattan.
East 32nd Street, the Cutting Room's new location.
Right.
Ship with your trio.
Right. And it's a CD release concert for my new CD, which is called Piano Song. Please check it out. Piano Song is the name.
Now, going to see Matt Ship is a singular pleasure. We got to go. We got one more track from on the blindfold test, and I think we're going to play something a little classical here. Okay. All right, because I know you're a fan of.
I know this and I can't.
Wait, listen, wait for it. Wait for it. That would be Bugs Bunny playing Liszt's Hungarian Rhapsody.
Oh, right, right. Okay, I knew the piece. but I couldn't think of
it. But everybody, you know, great introduction to classical music, Bugs Bunny. And even now, when I go to see the symphony, I describe it as the BBQ, the Bugs Bunny quotient. Right. If a guy in tails is gesticulating wildly, it's the high BBQ.
Well, good. I got all the jazz ones right. Of course.
You hear the carrot crunching.
Yeah,
You know, he's got his gloves stuck and he's eating a carrot.
Do you know who the pianist is?
Oh, the actual pianist.
Yeah. Do you have
no clue?
Oh, I just wonder because sometimes is.
But I can look it up on my computer.
Yeah, I just wondered.
But man, as always, it has been the fastest half hour on the internet today. I can't believe how fast this half. Matt, you got to come back. We got to
continue
this conversation. We've not talked about your secret love for Elton John,
right?
Which I share, by the way.
Right, right.
I'm very.
Benny and the Jets is one of the all-time space cadet.
It's a fucking masterpiece.
The blue,
like we were talking about before, it's like this unprecedented. I mean, I don't even know. Is it pop? Is it R&B? It's the tempo is like impossible to duplicate. It's just, and that riff,
right?
Oh man, that riff. We haven't talked about rock and roll. There's so much stuff we haven't talked about. We haven't talked about wrestling. You're a big wrestling fan,
right?
Well, maybe you'll come back to. Maybe we can talk about not WrestleMania. You know, we'll see how.
Well, since Linda McMahon's involved with the Trump. Regime now, the WWE is on my shit list right now.
Well, you are a man of great principle to be able to separate art from politics.
Well, I can't. Such. If Donald Trump touches it, it's tainted.
Yeah, but did you like it when Donald Trump was the billionaire versus billionaire match?
Yeah, but that was
a good match.
That was before he was Hitler.
Well, maybe he was. He just hadn't reached the apex of his journey.
Right, that was before we knew that these tendencies were going to actually affect our lives.
All right. Well, as ever, it has been the fastest half hour on the internet today. Matt Shipp, my guest today. Matt, thank you so much for coming by. We're gonna eat some pizza.
Sounds good to
okay?
me.
Okay, you know, which I'm sure you don't get when you're on NPR, like we always say here. Right. NPR equals no pizza radio. All right. Try to get Terry Gross to give you a slice of pizza. Not going to happen, my friend. All right. We're going to be back next week. It's Valentine's Day. It's the Super Bowl today. Who cares? But Matt, please come back because we got
to talk about
the failed promise of jazz fusion. We haven't talked about Sun Ra. We haven't talked about MMA. We haven't talked about David Bowie. And we haven't talked about Henry Rollins, who you work with.
He's a friend of mine, right?
That's right. So there's a lot of stuff. Please come back. Mike Geddes for Art Caesars, David Booth, and everybody at Heritage Radio. And here in Bushwick at Roberta's. We'll see you next week, Valentine's Day. Yeah!
Yeah.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.